good morning. I'm here at Oracle Design Consultants, and with me is Suhasini, and her work speaks volumes about the work which she has done here in Oracle and various cities of India. Hello, welcome.
Hi, welcome.
And as an adolescent, we often struggle to make the choices between right and wrong, what subjects to take between science, commerce and art.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always a struggle going on between the minds, like what should be the profession. So how did you decide to choose architecture as a subject?
You see, it was not a question of choice. I was just... Thank you. Do you want some water?
Some water would be good. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know there was a profession called architecture.
Okay.
When I was growing up in the 70s. But I loved visiting construction sites on the way back from school. When I was in 3rd standard, 4th standard, 5th standard. So I used to drag my little sister along on the way back and we'd cycle back from school. Stop over in construction sites, and my dream was one day I will just hire a bunch of guys and start making buildings. That's how it started.
You're talking about which city here?
We were living in Gujarat in Rajkot at that time. And then when I moved to Delhi and I saw bigger buildings, I said, definitely, this is what I want to do. I'm going to have a bunch of guys and I'm going to make my buildings because I can make something better than what's going on. It's only when I was in high school that I got to know that there's a profession called architecture. And I got to know there was a school of architecture. By then we had moved back to Delhi. And I got to know there was a school of architecture in Delhi. And I got to know also that there's no way that my parents are going to allow me to go to that school because the school had a reputation for rock and roll and drugs. But it was... That's all I knew.
Which is not there in Oroville.
No, but I didn't know about Oroville at that time. Anyway, so I came up with this grand scheme of getting myself admitted in two different colleges.
Is it possible to get into this?
Yeah.
Two different colleges?
Yeah. I finished my 12th. I applied to a college, which would be very easy to do, and I would take the bus, and I would say that I'm going there, and then get off the bus and go to the other college, spend my day there, collect the reading material from here, come back and do this both.
Oh, wow.
So,
yeah.
I have sat for the entrance exams for architecture school, and that's when I realized that it was no joke because I thought you just go write an entrance exam and you'll get it. I went to write the entrance exam and I realized there may be about 8,000-10,000 people writing the entrance exam for 28 seats.
For this particular college which you are talking about in Delhi?
In Delhi, the School of Planning and Architecture.
How many students are there for 1 year?
When I was studying, there were 28 students a year, and out of which eight seats were reserved. So you had 20 seats open. And the first 10 seats, you don't pay fees. So I was hoping to get into the first 10 seats. Even after I saw the crowd, I said, okay, I have to just get in somehow. I did, and I got in. I was the 10th. And I said, okay, now my scheme is set. I will go to Lady Shriram College in the morning for an hour, and then I go to School of Planning and Architecture, make some friends in Lady Shriram College, collect material, do the tour. But unfortunately, the architecture school published in the Times of India the people who got in, and my father saw the name. And that was a whole lot. It's because we have a full extended family in Delhi, grandparents, aunts, uncles, the whole tribe. Somehow I fought my way through and I did the 5 years.
So how did this Oracle come into picture? Did you know about Oracle that time?
I had...
Probably in your final year?
No, I actually heard about Oracle when I was... We just moved back to Delhi. We lived next to Mother's International School. At that time it was just Mother's School. And as it was next door, my parents said, go and get yourself admitted there and go to that. So I got myself admitted. And there was a whole bunch of students who were going to Pondicherry. And when they came back, one of them told me, oh, you want to study architecture? There is a place where there's a building in which a whole city is going to live. And she had seen the Matsumandir under construction. And she told me that the whole city is going to live inside the building. But I dropped out of that school very quickly. I was not happy there and I went to another school. During my internship, I actually applied to two other architects. But as I wanted to study planning after architecture, I got to know that there was one planning office in Pondicherry. It was the only planning office, actually, in those days, which was non-governmental.
What was this?
This was Oral Service Oroville in Pondicherry. And they had done two townships already, which was the Kudremukh Steel Township and Salem Steel Township. And they're working on the Vizag Steel Township at that time. So I applied to them saying, okay, if I don't get it with these two architects, who were the top architects of those kind of, at the country in those days, was Charles Correa and Laurie Baker.
You were here in India that
no,
time?
No, one was in Bombay, one was in Trivandrum.
Okay.
So I applied to Pondicherry also, saying, if not these two, then I go for a planning office.
Yeah.
And two of my classmates joined me at the time also. We all turned up in Pondicherry. We saw the office and we said, no way are we working here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we got to know that there is an architect in Oroville called Popo Pingle, who would take us on. So we moved to Oroville and we did our internship with him for 6 months.
And since then you are here, part of Oroville?
Actually, during that period it was quite a challenge because Oroville was a very small community. There was hardly any work. We used to work for 2 or 3 hours a day as interns and I used to get pretty bored.
You were very lucky.
Why?
Because the interns these days have to work 6 hours a day, or probably more than that.
Yeah, mine work more than 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
They have to. No, and we were used to.
2 hours a day, then what else did you do in the evening?
That's why I got very bored. And at that time, then I started looking at all the different material of that Roger had about the Oroville town plan, reading up about it. And then I discovered there was a whole basement in Bharat Nivas with all the models of the city and everything. So I took that on to clean up, repair the models. And as a result of it, I collected enough information to do my thesis on the Oroville Master Plan. And got in touch with Roger, collected material from him, worked with Kirit Joshi, who was one of the first chairmen for the governing board of Oroville. Worked with him for several months, analyzing the Life Divine and the Gnostic Society and Mother's dream for the ideal city. And the whole idea of evolution of mankind and all that. So, spent 6 months working on a critical analysis of the Oroville Master Plan.
Alright, so your first project here in Oroville was, I guess, suppose a visitor center.
Yeah.
Which is one of the best projects which I find till date. Because you have so many people visiting the visitor center and you have various restaurants there, like Dreamers Cafe, where you can have cafe and talk about various ideas. So how did this idea come to you?
My first project was not the visitor center. My first project when I started working was actually to set up the planning office.
In Oroville itself?
Yes. So, Virgil, at that time, we had this semi-basement of Bharat Nivas which was open. We put up temporary walls. We started looking at all the land documents, piecing it together and creating the map of Oroville because there was no unified map of our land position. To start putting all the each individual piece of land document, stitching it together by hand, and creating the land ownership map of Oroville. Then we started a group called the Oroville Resource Center, which was with all the green belters to make the existing land use of Oroville, and then make a study based on the Galaxy Master Plan and existing land use. And that's when we got kicked out of that office. Because they said that what we were doing was not according to Mother's Oroville. We would just had to build the city and not start analyzing the land and the topography and the watershed. And
but don't you think that as a architect, you all often have ideas like, okay, we should change from what others have thought in the
no,
past?
No, it was not about changing what others thought. I believe in the city and I believe that we
the
need
to... The ideas
are
still there, but... As an architect, don't you have any vision other than what people already
have?
I am
not that kind of an architect. No.
Your buildings speak of the green architecture sustainability.
Yes, but green architecture is not in contradiction to the galaxy. It is just that when you look at the galaxy in a very narrow spectrum, you don't see the green in it. You can just have a superficial green. Oh, there's more than 50% of the land which is unbuilt, so that's green. No. It's very much possible because for me, green design is not about built form. Green design is about lifestyle, sociology, the economics of the place, the topography, the human ecology of how people interact with each other, what kind of lifestyle will they have, how does it progress from one stage of development to the other seamlessly, and how do people, when they come here, use their creative capacity to create opportunities for the city to grow. Buildings is just the final output of it. The whole process behind a city is what makes it viable or not. And green is means it's not just the buildings, it's how people live in those buildings, how they build their lives with those buildings, and how the buildings change with them. That's why whether the visitor center or solar kitchen or any of the schools or housing projects, from where we have designed to what it actually becomes, there's a huge process where people who are going to use it and work with it can keep changing as we also keep changing it. It is not this stupid slogan that came, architecture's frozen music. It's not a fossilized thing. It is a living thing. Yeah. So that's why most of our projects are not spectacular architecture, but actually architecture that is related to the activities, function, climate, context, and the variation of all that happens around in it. Yeah. So it is not a static thing.
And this can be seen in the Auroville Public Library as well, where you have so many people coming there for the reading of books, and you have the solar passive design there. And it's wonderful to see that. Can you say something about the Humanscapes project, which is ongoing right now?
Humanscapes project actually came up from from two different pressures. One was, I was involved with a group that was trying to create some kind of movement in this country to completely revise our national building code. Our national building code has been written in 1970, and then it has just been amended piecemeal. After India committed to the climate change thing, we had to look at the whole development sector. And it was not going to happen by just little odd ends being amended. So under the leadership of Dr. Ajay Mathur, we looked at what can be done. And as a result of that, I talked to a few people in Auroville saying, look, we have an extremely exciting proposal where we can try as applied research in Auroville, especially in the area of habitat, not only to design and build differently, but also come up with a different lifestyle, because a major part of the carbon output is in the lifestyle of the people who occupy the building. If you could do something as an applied research and data log and give it to the government saying, you know, it is possible for India to meet its target if we would just live and design and build differently. At the same time, few of us, Hemant and others, felt that we were not very inviting to young people. Because when young people want to come and join Auroville, the pressure that they face in coming up with the money for housing and setting up their own business and all the different terms and conditions that they have to meet, it's not possible in today's economy for somebody to do all that and yet participate in life. So we needed housing for young people, and it was possible to work with the government to come up with applied research projects. So we put both these requirements together and made a project for 500 people to live there, 750 people to work there, and about public facilities for 1,000 people. This project, when we presented it to the HRD ministry, they said, okay, great, we will now put it in front of what was then called the Planning Commission and today Niti Aayog. And we had a meeting between Finance Ministry, Law Ministry, Ministry for Urban Development, Ministry for Renewable Energies, HRD Ministry, Education Sector, and there was one more ministry. So we had a meeting with all these ministries together. We presented the project. Niti Aayog said, yes, we want it. Plus, they added one more component that we would do data logging and come up with a format which was called SustainNet, that can be used by other projects across the country by saying between the design, the user, and coming up with policy statements based on that. So then they asked the HRD Ministry to finance it. We are still waiting for the HRD Ministry to finance it. Meanwhile, the governing board said that why don't you use a seed grant from the normal Government of India grants that we're giving you every year. So last year we got the first seed grant, based on which we started the phase 1A, which is for about 44 people to live there. And the idea is not just the building materials and the design. It's we've come up with a living lifestyle where it frees the young people from having to commit before their time what they want to do with their life. So we have apartments which are four single rooms, which will share living, dining, kitchen, and they all have the bathrooms. We have apartments for single young parents who are single parents. We have apartments for couples who don't mind taking on one more person as a common living space. We have apartments for larger families that could also have volunteers living with them. So this way we try to make not only the living space shared, but the activities shared. So we have common laundry, so the machines are shared, not everybody has to invest in it, in the machines. We are having a collective space where you can have stuff. You want to use a blender or a mixer, you can just go, get it done and come back. So every young person doesn't have to invest also in appliances and furniture and everything. So you have several things. It's not like you have to eat together and you have to do this together, but it is actually facilities that you can just use as needed. We'll have ironing boards. If you're an idiotic enough to have clothes that need ironing and you don't need to own an iron. And the main idea of this is that most of the stuff manufactured since 1980 is designed and manufactured for obsolescence. So if you own a mixer blender, even if you use it only once or twice a month, after 3 years you have to replace it because the spare parts are not available, the LCD chip is not available because they don't match. So maximize the use to short circuit the manufacturing built-in obsolescence that makes us consumers. You understand? So you actually go into sustainability at another end by allowing people to share stuff rather than having to own it, or because you cannot own it, have to cut back on the kind of user pattern that you want to live with. Because no matter what kind of iron you buy, it does not last for more than 3 to 5 years. So if every household has to buy a new iron every 3 to 5 years, imagine the landfill and the carbon footprint. Every washing machine after 7 years breaks down, whether you use it once a week or 10 times a week, you see. So what we try to do is not force people to live in a way where you have to have collected, but you can use all these facilities without having to invest in owning them. And that is the whole idea of Humanscape, is not just green building, but actually a lifestyle that allows you to have diversity without having to pay for it.
You don't have to pay anything for this?
No, we are hoping to get the grants to stock up all this and the people just start using it, you know. So we'll have the building grant from the government, and we hope with the help of the governing board and other agencies in Oroville to get donations. I'm trying to ask 2 people who were snooker champions of Tamil Nadu to find clubs that want to get rid of their old pool table donated to us. Then we'll have a pool table for the people living there to play. If I can get somebody to give us a projector, then we can all watch football matches, you know, by connecting it to a small laptop, and yeah, that's it. You know, technology allows you to short-circuit many of the stuff. So we don't all need to own a TV. If we can have a place, we put in a nice projection wall and we will get the...
We can see the match.
Yes, and you can watch TV series, Game of Thrones, you know. That's the whole idea. And I find that Orville is a bit behind in this, because I have a son, lives in London, and from what he does, because of the economics of being so hard today on young people, they have automatically started this. He lives in a house which he shares with 6 other people. They share the kitchen dining, they have 3 bathrooms, and they have a space where they invite everybody on Saturday, Sundays, and they cook together. They have one cable connection, one person's laptop, somebody else has a projector that they borrow from the office, and they watch movies together. There's a laundromat around the corner. Everybody piles their laundry in. They take turns to go and do it. There are centers in London where the supermarket sends the food that is not sold at half price, because instead of junking it. So young people who have entry-level jobs go and shop there on Saturday, Sundays, you see. So it is half marked down. The food is, the produce is still good, but normal people do not buy because the marked up date is God, its expiry date. But the tomatoes look as fresh still. But the expiry date, the supermarket, legally are not allowed to sell it. Sorry.
No problem.
And so there are groups that are actually making it accessible for people to live well with least amount of cost, because the legal, administrative, political system does not allow for various things to happen, you see.
Yeah.
And in Oroville, we are a little bit backward in that. So Hemant and I are just trying to kickstart something, and we're hoping that the young people take over. Like today morning I went to Porto's. I wanted to pick up some brinjals, aubergine. And I looked in, the bottom had started to rot, you know. And she said, yeah, we'll have to just throw it out. If we had somebody who would just collect, go to PTDC and Porto's and collect it and bring it to a place like Humanscapes or Muerchi or VDK, saying, okay, we collect the vegetables which are not so fresh but can be cooked today evening only.
Will we have a kitchen here at Humanscapes?
We have a kitchen there.
So we don't have to go to Solar Kitchen all the time for having
yes,
dinner.
Yes, and the Youth Link has already started awesome. Working with Humanscapes group in housing to take over this kitchen, to also not just to run it as a kitchen, but also as a mentorship program for people who want to go into cooking. You
like
see?
PTDC.
Yeah.
So, mentorship programs.
Yeah. So that mentorship program will move to Humanscapes actually, because okay. It's not meant to be, so it's temporarily there. It moves in there, and I'm hoping that Youth Link is created enough to make a thing between PTDC and the Aspiration Portals to get the vegetables at half price, to be able to do it so that it's cheaper for young people to live here, you know.
Yes.
So it is, when you don't have the money, you need to have the energy to find ways and means to go around. Yeah. But you cannot do it on an individual level. You can do it if you're groups of 10, 12 people. Then, you know, you can still hold a job, and somebody can do this today and somebody else can do. But if you have to do all these things, find the loopholes in everywhere and yet hold a job down or build up a unit, it's not possible. So Humanscape is an opportunity for young people to actually put their energy together to find ways and means not only to live here cheaper, so in terms of just monetary, but in terms of time, to be able to devote more of your time into developing your careers or what you can do for Oroville while other people pick up the slack. The last thing I want to say is that I also think that we should not fall into the trap where we fragment life between work and living, like the rest of the world has done. I would like life and a living or a profession to be more integrated into it. Not everybody has to go out and do a job to be able to have the means to live. So with Humanscapes, we are trying to bring in urban agriculture, renewable energies and everything, so that somebody living in Humanscape takes care of the campus for the others, and he or she in return gets their other needs paid for or catered to, you see. If everybody has to go out like me and run an office and then just go home where you're parking your toothbrush, then I have to pay for my food, I have to pay for the cleaning of the house, I have to pay for everything. But if I would live in a community where somebody is taking care of the gardens, taking care of the sewage treatment plant, taking care of other things, my running an office actually pays for that person to actually run the community. Running the community or the settlement where we live in is as equally important as just going out and building projects for other people.
Yeah.
You know? And this is a concept that they have given this great terminology called co-housing. But this is something that was intrinsic to most traditional settlements, where you would have a shop below, which is repairing shoes, and you live above, and people could, you know, drop your shoes off, go and work there, and then the vegetable will be here. You know, this kind of mixed land use and development allows people to do many things without having to always depend on transport, on money, on movement, on time management, and other things. When we were kids, walking back from school on the bus stop, we would see our mother in the vegetable shop, walk back with her. Today, you have to go to the mall, or you have to go to the supermarket. It's not anymore on the street level, you see.
Yeah.
And then, of course, traffic increases, because everybody has to go from point A to point B to point C for every little thing. So Humanscapes, we want to provide all that into the campus, that not only people who live there, the people who live around can also use the facility. Yeah.
Along with this, do you feel that there should be a place here in Auroville where visitor centers, we have very close to the visitor center in African Pavilion, where you'll have a commercial center? You feel it is good to have a commercial center in the
African... What do you mean by a commercial center?
A commercial center will have the products displayed and we can sell the products, which is not from Auroville, but from people from outside.
That we would not be able to do within the master plan area, but there is a project that we're working on right now, which is the Mohanam Village Heritage Center, where the government of Pondicherry Tourism Department with the city in France is financing the building, and Mohanam Group is putting together with several villages where the villagers can come and showcase their products and sell it to the visitors. And we intend to also have a farmer's market and cooking classes and training of the young women of the village for other things, and run also a kind of alternative health and spa and stuff like that. So that will also be, so in, there's a hub which is a visitor center which showcases Auroville activities and Auroville products. This will be for the local area.
Okay.
So, we're parallelly starting that, yeah. The construction is starting next month for it.
So, Auroville's 50th birthday anniversary is coming, and do you have any message to give to the young architects who are here? And what you would see, what you would want to see Auroville growing in the future?
Young architects. I am not a typical architect. So my message is, my message is, you see, I practice architecture as a profession, but my vocation is human ecology. I read up on various things. I spend every free time I have doing that. I'm a very selfish architect. I don't go out and showcase my projects, publish, you know, and try to have a web page and Facebook page to invite more projects and everything. I choose my projects. Then you get more and more visitors and more projects, and that's not what I'm interested in.
Okay.
What I'm interested in is actually to bring architecture back to what it was actually supposed to be. It was supposed to be a social intervention with leadership taken by people who understand history, geography, geology, botany, you know, mechanics, and other things, to help society to organize itself better. Not do it for them, but actually enable them to do it themselves. Because we have 40,000 young architects passing out in this country every year.
Okay.
Where is a job opportunity for them? Because 99% of this country builds without architects.
There's always a tussle between going on between the architects and the builders.
Yeah, because architects do not get involved in the politics, in the financing mechanism, in understanding how the labor market works. They just wanted to design. And they are kind of marginalizing themselves. The structural engineer comes and says, no, no, madam, this is how we can do it, because you don't know how to read your soil report. You have to just go by him. And he doesn't want to innovate. He wants to do what he did for the last 10 projects, where he can cut and paste. Because you don't understand your soil report. You don't understand the basics of soil mechanics. You don't understand structures. The air conditioning guy tells you something, you have to go by it, because you don't understand hydraulics. You know, and basic conceptual knowledge of 25 different fields has to be taught to architects, and they have to understand the physics, chemistry, history, biology, and geology, and topography, and other things. Only then you will know the troubles that the developer goes through. And only then you can collaborate with him. Right now, we are saying our design is better, you just have to build it. He has to go and sell it to a market which is not interested in design. Most of the Indian market, except for a very small elite, has no design sense. For them, they're going by economy. And we are not going by economy. Yeah? They want maximum value. The land value in Dharwin, when there's a woman wants to just to, it's 10,000 rupees per square foot. She is investing for getting a 10 square feet space to live in. And this is not counting all the recycled material she'll collect to put up a hut. This is 10,000 rupees a square foot that she pays to the local mafiosi to have the 10 square foot where a family of 7 to 8 people will be living. Okay? And in a 2 square kilometers in Dharavi, there's more than 1.5 million people living.
Yeah.
And they are providing their own services and they are a huge manufacturing base. And what are we talking about? Where do the architects fit there?
30%. That's where the architects have to come up and take a stand and do something.
There's no stand to take.
There's, or build a stand.
Only thing is that be relevant to the needs. We are not relevant to the needs. We are only relevant to the software that keeps coming out. I get interns who know how to design only using SketchUp because they can't read drawings. And then once they've made the volumes, they translate it into 2D and they have no idea why they've done what they've done, because the outer shape looks good, but inside it makes no sense in terms of functionality, in terms of ratio of plinth area to carpet area. It'll be 12-13% more, the plinth area. And you're going to 15% of your building is non-usable and you're putting your money into it. Circulation will be about 35-40%, you know, and you're putting money into 35-40% of the space that you will just pass through. It's very sustainability. It's few solar panels for them then. Sustainability is maximizing usable space so that you build less first. Reduce the buildable space by maximizing the usable space first. Learn how to convince your client that they don't need to build so much by allowing them to understand that whatever requirements they have, you can actually build it for much less. Not in terms of the final cost, but reducing the amount you build. Because you cannot pay the labor less, that is criminal. Cement bag is going to cost what it costs, steel costs what it costs. So where is your cost reduction coming from? So everybody keeps talking about low-cost housing, but actually finally they talk about low-quality housing because the cost is what it is per cubic meter of material. The labor is what it is. Today, in any building, 60% of your cost is labor. And they need to live with the cost of living. How are you going to cut down on labor? By mechanizing it? Mechanization costs as much. So, you have to be efficient in your design. Not trying to cut down on the labor cost by paying them less. And most of the time, cost reduction is done by paying the labor less, you know. So we are living on somebody else's poverty.
Oh, it should not be like that. The labor should be given fair and equal.
And then we talk about the poor quality of labor we have, because how are they going to get better? They are opportunistic. You pay them 5 rupees more, they'll come to you. Somebody pays them 10 rupees more, they go to them. They don't learn on the job because there's no job continuity. Because they have to survive. That's it. We as designers have phased ourselves out. We have become like the call centers. We're just there to make drawings between the developer and the financing mechanism. We're just one cog in the wheel. They can do without us very easily.
But I don't believe they would be doing as good work as an architect does.
They can't. That's an illusion. Probably. Maybe the buildings don't look pretty, but they're pretty efficient what these guys build.
Okay.
I have seen work of young architects for apartment buildings, and then that's a concept that they publish. But then what is built, the architect's crying, what I did, he never did. But you look at it, for the same square footage, the guy is able to give bigger rooms, which are more efficient. Maybe the building doesn't look so pretty from outside, but actually, the person who invests in it is getting more value for the money. The only problem is that the developer cuts on the quality, but he's maximizing their space.
So how do you feel is a solution between the developer and the architect's vision, where you can fit both of them together?
The architects have to first start widening their knowledge base.
As you said about different subjects and coming
different
up.
Subjects and start really focusing on understanding building systems and understanding the cost of construction in this country and where it is and what is happening and everything, so that every little decorative band that you put on when over the whole building, it would just drive the price up by 3%. Is that 3% investment worth that little band? Why not work with a building envelope that speaks for itself rather than these decorative bands or these stupid chajas which project out? Design it into the building that you don't have to do these elevation add-ons. You know, every piece that you do has a utilitarian value while adding to the aesthetics of it, and not just decorative. Because it is criminal knowing that our safety standards is actually 3 times the what we need because of the quality of construction is so low. You know, so for every building built in India, 2 more buildings of the same can be built. And the reason Indian government has 3 times the safety standards is because they know that the quality of construction is so poor that they have to take 3 times more. So for when you take 1 reinforcement bar, it is actually 3 times more than what it needs to be, because the way the bar bending is done is wrong, not okay. The way the manufacturing of steel is done is not okay. The way it is executed on site is not okay. The way the concrete is cast is not okay. The way it's cured is not okay. And the way then plumbing is done that it leaks into it is not okay. The cover is not okay. So taking all this is not okay. Absolutely. Makes it that you have to increase the amount of steel, the mix, everything is increased to make up for untrained labor, poorly trained architect, poorly trained project management, no supervision, no quality control. You know? So we actually spend 3 times the amount of money because we don't invest in human resources and their training, right down from the labor to the architect. Instead of teaching ourselves how to do the job properly, we are spending material with a huge carbon footprint. So that's why I'm saying, I'm not a typical architect, so make beautiful designs.
No,
so
your, teach yourself. Your design speaks volumes and it is beautiful. Mm. You just have to see it.
Yesterday I gave a 4-hour lecture in a college in Chennai on sustainability. And I started with basic history of human beings on this planet to show that it was not in the last 50 years that we've been pumping out so much carbon dioxide in the air. Since last 8,000 years we've been doing it. With the way we do agriculture, the way our cities are planned, the food we eat. I mean, from 2003 to 2017 in India, people below the age of 40 are buying 60% more clothing than they used to. And you can imagine the impact of this on the environment and on landfills. And the clothing is getting cheaper and cheaper, but so who is paying for our clothing? When the Bangladesh, in Dhaka, the factory burns down because safety standards are compromised to keep the cost per unit clothing down. So those people's lives are paying for our cheap t-shirts. In China, the color of the runoff into the streams indicates what is the color of the fashion of that season. Because money is not being invested in recycling the dyes that are putting into the clothing coloring, you know. So we can get very cheap, multiple wash clothing that does not fade at the cost of the river systems in China.
I believe in India, the young architects who will be building have to come up and do wonderful work, because 65% of the India's population is under 25 years.
Yes.
Right now. And we have amazing potential here and good energy. So yeah, and the last question which I would want to ask you and would know is, you have so many projects, done so many projects here. Is there any one of your projects which is very dearest to you, which you have really enjoyed doing it?
I wouldn't say there's any one, because for me, each project has its ups and downs, because it's every project is a kind of a collaboration between the clients, us, the contractor, and the users. So for me, every project, I just look at it after it's done. It's like, you know, after you had a baby and you brought it up, and then he or she goes out into the world and makes it. It's a bit like that. You cannot say, I choose this child more than that child. you know.
Yeah.
They're all dear to me. And I spend at least about 10 hours a week pro bono, because I go around all these projects and still monitoring and helping out. Little changes, little adaptations. I spent a few hours in the visitor center, in Solar Kitchen, PTDC, and the schools we've done, because things keep evolving, you know, and there's neither money nor architecture that involved in it. But you just help out. Okay, now the kids don't want to use the wash basins at this height. How can we monitor it so that they can still access it? What do we do? So then I find a wash basin that's not used in this project or there, and ask contract, do you have somebody who can just give us a half bag cement? And then, you know, and it's not big donations that can go into the books, but it's multiple small helping hands that keeps each of these projects running. It's never a finished product, you know. And that is where I find, at least in Oroville, architects should not look at their input as this kind of divas who do buildings, but actually be part of the society that helps it to go from one level to another level. And your input is in buildings, while the person who's doing the dishes in the solar kitchen, their input is to make sure the next mealtime they're clean, dry dishes on the counter for people to pick up, and that the school teacher who gets every year a new bunch in the kindergarten makes sure that the kids that go out to the next year are actually happy to go to school and have learned how to learn, you see? Because each one's input actually creates better buildings for the future. If the dishwasher didn't do it properly and the school teacher didn't do it properly, you as an architect would not have a process with citizens who are equally appreciative of their input to the society. The most frustrating jobs are always with people who are frustrated with their life. And they are frustrated with their life because what they do is not of a certain quality, because they've never learned to give quality back, because they were never appreciated in their little job. You know? If you want to make good buildings, you have to work with good people, and good people can come out only of a society that appreciates them. And that is the only thing I'm interested in Oroville, is to make sure that every Orovillian feels that he or she is giving their best, because it is actually appreciated. And it can be appreciated for in 1 hour or 1 minute, doesn't matter. But that helps the next thing to be better. If everybody feels only some people are contributing and only their contribution matters, we are not going to create a beautiful architecture here. No way. Everybody will be short. I mean, this country is an example of that. Everybody feels that they're not appreciated, so they all find shortcuts, right? And they all try to do jugaad,
yeah.
Get through, you know. And in the end of the day, the products that we make are not appreciated too. You give what you get. And everybody keeps saying, you have to give your best. But if you don't get the best, you're never going to give your best.
It's good to see that, you know, when we have here places like Oroville Visitor Center, people will keep coming to this place.
Yeah.
Solar Kitchen, they will keep on hanging
out. And they're
out
not perfect. I'll be the first
to. Not perfect,
to...
but still, it's a good place to go and have a discussion about.
Yeah. None of my buildings are perfect. They all could have done. I could have done much better, but only thing I can say, all my buildings are living, and that for me is a success criteria. They are living, and when I say living, it's that the people who use them feel that they can actually intervene in those buildings, that they take ownership. Yeah, they can take ownership and they tinker with it, they tweak it, they adapt it, and they make it a living building and not a monument to admire and sit in a corner and just do your thing so that you don't disturb this perfection that the architect has left behind. No, perfection is fossilizing.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.